Jhené Angola Jr., the podcast.
You know what? Speaking of cuffing season.
Oh, dear.
Competitions. Finding that one to cuddle up with right now. I am jazzed. I did not get to watch the latest episode of The Bachelorette last night. But coming up in a little bit, for anyone that was around during Hannah Brown season, Tyler C. going to be joining us. Tyler Cameron going to be joining us here in the 6 o'clock hour. I got so many questions on what goes on in the Bachelor Mansion, Jhené. I am thrilled.
I have so many questions, too. I don't know if I can ask the most important one. I asked you guys this before the show. I feel like it'd be out of pocket. Yeah, I can't do it. But I have many Bachelorette and Bachelor show questions, yes.
She wants Dale's number. That's what she wants. Jhené Angola Jr. here
I'm
on ESPN Radio.
No.
Mike Golic Jr., Jhené Egbuamoke. Based on the interview I saw last night where, and for anyone that missed it, Claire Crawley was the original Bachelorette. She's already run off with Dale from that season. I saw them doing a sit-down interview last night. I have never seen someone's soul leave their body faster than when Chris Harrison asked them, what is next? These people who met for probably a cumulative 2 hours on this show, unless we find out they were talking beforehand, which I highly suspect, looked at Chris Harrison and went, babies! That man I thought was going to roll over and die in his chair.
Look, I'm not going to say anything about romances because my other specialty, even though I watch it more regularly, is 90 Day Fiancé. And people could like have relationships on social media for years and then end up meeting each other for 2 hours and get married. So this could be a possibility.
And listen, I think that all microwaves as we get older right now. Like, you know a little bit more of what you want. But in that situation, it looked like he was a little concerned with the answer
life
that he
comes
had
at
got.
You fast.
Indeed. Jhené Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Jhené Egbuamoke. Speaking of life coming at you fast, Jerry Jones, every time he pops on the microphone, you just raise up the sports talk radio alarm. Like, okay, something's happening here. We get to address it and freak out about it. And Jhené, I'm curious on this one because I have been very riled up all offseason watching the way Dak Prescott has been dealt with in this organization, because I believe that if you've got a star quarterback in your organization, you find a way to make it work. And when a team doesn't for this long, it shows you something about what they actually think. Now, Jerry Jones was on 105.3 The Fan on Tuesday talking about the Cowboys, who are currently number 3 in draft order, and was asked if it was unthinkable they would draft Trevor Lawrence in that position. He said, quote, yes, if you're asking me if it's crazy to bring that idea up, and I've answered it yes, meaning that's crazy. It's not the thing to be talking about at all. Dak is our quarterback. Jhené, do we believe this guy at all at this point?
I'm sorry. No, I can't. Just because the situation that you're in is a situation pretty much that you created. And when you're looking at the money options, you know, he played in 2020 this year on a franchise tag of what, 31 million? Around 31 million? You could get a rookie quarterback potentially for way less than that. And so I feel like no option should be off the table, even though he's trying to say and do the right things by Dak. He's trying to say the right things. You haven't really shown that you're going to do the right thing. And now that's put you in a bind where now if you're presented with maybe a young top quarterback, how are you not going to look at that option, especially when it fits your cap scenario better than the quarterback that you actually say is a better fit on the football field?
For the sake of putting the proper thing out there and to cover up for the fact that I just flat out forgot we had this sound on the board and decided to read it very poorly in all this, here was Jerry Jones, the Cowboys owner, on 105.3 The Fan yesterday talking about Dak Prescott the draft.
You know, right now it looks like we're in line for the third pick. Now it could move up, could move down, but if it stays at 3, is it crazy to bring up the idea of taking a quarterback with the third pick or the second pick if you may have it?
Yes. You asked me if it's crazy to bring the idea up, and I'm answering you. Yes. We're playing games here, guys, but it's not the thing to be talking about at all. You know, Dak is our quarterback.
Jhené Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. A lot of things to unpack here. First off, in the background, does that not sound like the old school horror music movie that plays in the background in the scene where the killer's finally getting revealed? Just that low buzz all the time in the background?
Yeah, no, it absolutely sounded like that. If I heard that, like, going to sleep, I'd be really freaked out. But, like, I feel like when we – you know what's funny? I'm really glad you played the sound. I love you reading, for one, but I'm glad you played the sound.
I didn't read
because, but no, you did really well. I got the whole gist. I think listening to that now and hearing him sort of laugh before he even gets to his answer.
Right.
That, to me, I was like, how can we take that seriously? Because – the whole process, you haven't taken your quarterback that you say you value seriously, and now you're in a position where maybe you won't be able to pay him, and now having a younger guy come in that you can pay, now you're not taking that seriously either. Help me make sense of this.
That's the part I don't understand. You're right. And he says, this is not what we're supposed to be talking about, or not what we should be talking about now. All right, like, I understand maybe Jerry Jones for once having the understanding that if I say this now, I'm going to bring even more upheaval into a locker room that's going to, you know, God knows who at quarterback each and every week at this point while they wait for Andy Dalton to get healthy, and maybe having the foresight for that. But, Chinee, you just mentioned it. All this offseason, Dak's our quarterback. You know what? If Dak was your quarterback, you would have had him sign. And Cowboys fans, save the discussion about, well, we wanted to sign him to a contract, but it was 5 years and he wanted 4 years. Guess what happens when you've got a quarterback that you love, that you want around long term? You find a way to make it work. That's what happens all the time in this league. And again, if you're trying to tell me, well, Dak is just markedly more selfish and self-centered and going to ask for too much more than the rest of those quarterbacks, I'm confused because it flies in the face of everything that everyone, y'all have ever told me about Dak Prescott in this instance. So I'm not going to buy it. And you're right, Jerry Jones would be crazy not to, because the way he structured all of this, the contracts he's doled out at other positions, he said, the rest of this team to me is more valuable than this quarterback is at the helm of it. We can put someone else in there, and if I build enough around it, we'll be good. So why wouldn't you think about going young and cheap the way the draft allows you to, when you might be in range of, maybe if it's not Trevor Lawrence, but Justin Fields, Trey Lance, these top prospects that we see out here that might be able to bail you out of a situation that could have crushed you next year financially.
You know, I really love, first of all, I want to give you snaps for that one. I really love that. Can you sort of outline for people and take us even really behind the scenes of how you believe that Dak, I mean, it's obvious that we're seeing his value in a different way, but can you sort of outline betting on the outside, not on the inside, when it comes to the quarterback position?
Well, yeah, looking at the structure, I mean, we talked about this Dallas offense going into the season. You know, you acquire CeeDee Lamb in the draft. You've got still the remnants and the core pieces of one of the best offensive lines in football going back to like 2016. Zach Martin, Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins when he's healthy, but you watched all of that fall down around you. And even then, you still say, well, from the outside looking in, I don't know anyone in there. I haven't talked to anyone in there, but I'm just looking the way they've decided to build from the outside. And I'm saying, you paid a running back in 2020, which we know has been seen as less and less financially prudent as time goes along on this. You doled out contracts to a middle linebacker on a defense that hasn't performed, a pass rusher on that side of the ball. All these things that have popped up in here that indicated, all right, we thought we could put a system in place and then not pay the thing at the middle of it, not pay the position at the middle of it in quarterback in a way that me that just signal, all right, they don't love you like that, Dak. Like, that is the message received loud and clear. They might love you, but not to the level that we see for other star quarterbacks in this league.
Yeah. Do you think it's, like, too little too late? Because if he just now had this epiphany, like, oh, my gosh, Dak is my guy. And obviously the situation, you know, presented where maybe you can find a discount, but one that is a long-term potential, someone you can build into. Do you think it's too late? Or, I mean, I feel like we all sort of know the answer, but I just want to get your take.
I think they've made it extremely difficult. I don't think Jerry Jones has had some sort of epiphany. I think that chuckle that you talked about there is a little more telling. I'm not going to try and read into every bit of the verbiage here. But at the same time, I think we also know the financial realities going into next season, whether it's the franchise tag again, or whether it's what a long-term deal looks like for a quarterback whose value we've seen, but also just dealt with a major injury that complicates things thoroughly in here. I don't think anything has changed. I think Jerry, for once, just decided to avoid saying the thing that would rile people up, even though anytime he says something, it's going to rile people up.
I was just thinking about, like, how we interpreted all of our takes based on a laugh. Like, there's a laugh where we're like, ha, 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 we're having a good time. Then there's a laugh before, like, ha, 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 I'm about to read you. And then there's a laugh like, ha, ha, I'm nervous and I don't know what to say and this is what I'm going to say and I may not be speaking the truth. I think we got the latter.
We spend so much time in sports talk media reading things like a first date, right? Like, looking from the outside in on that, like, did he laugh too hard at one of my jokes in
here? It was
here?
A nervous,
like,
laugh, right?
Yeah, that was a nervous laugh. Did I talk about my parents too early? Did I mention I want to have kids when I was on national TV with a guy that I just
met
2 hours
ago? Did I ask you how much
ago?
You make?
Yeah. Is that inappropriate to ask for a full height on the scouting report and not the one that you put on your basketball roster? All of Ooh. These questions that we read into in these situations. All right, coming up next, we have to get into something that popped up during the last break. The worst nickname you've ever received. I'll give you two of mine. That is how cruel life has been to me, that I've already amassed two of these in 30 years. And plus, we'll get to a Major League Baseball team that just continues to wallow in their own mistake. That's next. It's Chinee and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
This is one of those days where we have a lot of very, like, interesting, serious, compelling subjects to get to. What's going on in the area of the NFL, more efforts on diversity and inclusion when it comes to the hiring practices within the league at some higher levels. We'll talk to our ESPN NFL reporter Kimberly Martin in about 10 minutes and try and get some light shed on all those things. It's Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chiney Agwumike. We've got that. We've got Tony La Russa. Some quotes that are laughable if it weren't so sad for someone that was just hired, and a lot of people believe mistakenly so, by the Chicago White Sox in this situation. But before we get to any of that, I want to roll around in the muck that is our breaks on the show sometime, because I was sitting around here, Chiney, and I was reminded, we were talking during the break about, you know, my football career, and we were talking about what ifs and stuff like that, and I said career very shortly in this, and Devin made a joke at the expense of what I've always talked about. I had small hands as a center who was trying to grip the football. It was a bit of a difficult process sometimes, and Devin reminded me that he had maybe the toughest nickname in the history of the offensive line position. Devin?
Yeah, as a fellow offensive lineman, peewee football, I played 1 year of football. I was named the Gentle Ones. As an offensive lineman, that's probably the last nickname you want.
Man, that's tough.
I was more technique. I wasn't a bowl guy, bowl rusher. I mean, that's actually the defensive line. So as you can tell, I'm not very good at football. But, you know, I was all technique.
Very much so. Technique, finesse, all the above, Devin. So the Gentle One is a tough nickname.
Yeah, that's rough.
And so we were sitting around here wondering, like, and now you've played, which I feel like basketball, you get a fair amount of nicknames. Like, coming up through, what's the worst nickname you've ever had?
Honestly, I'm starting to like think about my nicknames, and I love them all. My family calls me Cookie. There's a funny story about that, but I'll save it for break. People call me C, but my favorite nickname probably is, and it's maybe like it's borderline funny / inappropriate, but like because my name is Chiney, my team calls me Chi, or oftentimes Chi Chi. In middle school, I often got Shanaynay from Martin, because that was the first time people heard Chiney. But I love Chi. I love Chi-Chi, well, and Chi-Chi is my name.
I feel like Chiney, like, again, we're talking about bad nicknames, and all of yours are good for the most part.
I know. Like, I can't think of a bad one.
This is what happens. Like, this is the charmed life of Chiney versus the rest of us here. Cliff, any nicknames on the front for you?
I used to always just get Cliff or Cliffy or the Bull. There's nothing really crazy.
Only football players understand, Mike. Only football players.
I could say only.
What's yours?
So I had two, actually. And mine is almost as unfortunate growing up as Devin's was. Growing up, I had a family friend who used to call me Pudding, which, let me tell you what, as a heavyset middle schooler, not the thing you want to be called on a frequent basis.
But did you like it, though?
No.
I'm talking about the food.
Oh, well, I mean, of course. I was shaped like pudding. I had to love pudding. I had no choice in that spot.
Okay, but hey, now that you mature, you know, we talk about the glow-up process. Being called pudding is a good thing.
Well, Chiney,
hey,
I don't...
I'm going to call you pudding for the rest of the show.
This is what I've invited in here. I should say that was a consistent through line of my nicknames going forward, because I had an interaction with Dominique Foxworth, one of the first shows I hosted on ESPN Radio. I was on with Dominique, and we were in some heated discussion talking about, like, it was something about race or anything like that injecting in sports, and I went to chime in. It was like Dominique. I think Ryan Clark might have been there. And as I went to chime in, I'm like 26 years old, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and Dominique goes, "Don't worry, Creamy, we got this one," on air. And I was like, I love Dominique. And it was hilarious, and we laughed about it off air, but I went, wow, first pudding and now Creamy. I get the pattern here, guys. Message received.
And this is why I love Dom, because Dom is intense. And so if that's your first impression, you're like, oh my gosh, you freak out. But then he's really more like pudding on the inside. Pudding.
Oh, God. At Chiney, at Mike Golic Jr., what's your worst nickname? I need to get away from this. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed, because now I didn't realize that part of it, that Chiney was going to like that, latch onto it, and now shame me with it for the rest of time.
That's what you get for working with a woman.
These are all fair points. Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chiney Agwumike here. That's a Chiney exclusive. None of the rest of you guys get to call me Puddin'. That's exclusively a Chiney outlet on this show. But again, your worst nickname, at Chiney, at Mike Golic Jr. Chiney, as we look to Major League Baseball, though, I heard a very fired-up Mike Wilbon talking, and I think understandably frustrated about what's going on for the Chicago White Sox. Their manager, Tony La Russa, was, first off, hired in a spot where most people looked and said, with Tim Anderson and that team and what we know of Tony La Russa, who we haven't seen managing in almost a decade, this one smells kind of funny. Well, Now we saw in a report from our own Jeff Passan on ESPN.com that Tony La Russa, who's 76 years old, was charged with a DUI in late October by Maricopa County Attorney's Office in Arizona after a blood and breath test were taken the night of his February arrest showed his blood alcohol level was over the legal limit. During that time period, he was seen flashing a ring at a police officer arresting him for driving under the influence, saying, quote, "I'm a Hall of Fame famer baseball person." Come on, what are we doing in this situation? And so I just want to allow our colleague Mike Wilbon, you see him on PTI every day, to sound off a little bit on what the White Sox should do about Tony La Russa.
Probably back out of the agreement that they have with him, Tony. I mean, being responsible and being accountable are seemingly, to me anyway, more necessary where we are in the culture now than ever before. And it's not enough to be accountable and responsible for a baseball game when you're explaining yourself afterward. Real life circumstances should count even more. Tony La Russa comes off as particularly stupid in this case, and he's not. We know that. But his "do you know who I am" routine upon his being arrested, and he's had all these weeks, even months, to figure somebody's going to come and ask me about this and I need to be accountable, and he's gone the other way with this insane defiance and arrogance. And no, Tony, that shouldn't be tolerated, not by the White Sox, Jerry Reinsdorf specifically, and if so, not by Major League Baseball.
Jerry Reinsdorf, who, again, people believe was the single man in favor of this hire inside of the organization. And, Chiney, coupled with reports that La Russa already hasn't reached out to some of the stars on the team like Tim Anderson, it just seems like a situation that's already been every bit of the catastrophe people expected when the hire was made.
Yeah, I think this seems like a cultural miscalculation to a great degree, because if we're looking at the World Series and a lot of the narrative, especially after the Dodgers won, a lot of people were saying, oh, we have too many numbers in baseball, too much analytics. Let's get back to like the feel of the game and that cultural aspect. And so now I think you see a situation where that is working completely opposite, where culturally this guy is not in tune.
No, and it seems to have been a fit that everyone from the outside recognized was not an appropriate one from the start, except for, again, one person that we all believe this ultimately boils down to. But coming up next, I want to stick with that idea of culture, because we heard that come up today around the Houston Texans. And coming up next, I want to address what the hell that even means, talking about that organization and a decision that they have made. We'll get to that next after this word from ButcherBox. No one likes to actually go to the grocery store. Nobody, especially not me. I got Netflix to catch up on. Especially during the holidays, that's why there's ButcherBox. ButcherBox ships high-quality meat conveniently right to your door. From free-range organic chicken to heritage-breed pork, 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef, to fresh-caught seafood like salmon and scallops, ButcherBox has over 20 different cuts of meat that you can choose from. And their boxes ship fresh right to your door. For a limited time now, ButcherBox is going to knock a huge to-do list off your holiday shopping trip. They're going to give you a free Thanksgiving turkey. Whole turkey. Do whatever you want with it. Fry it. Cook it in the oven. I don't care. Good luck. Give you a free Thanksgiving turkey with your first box when you sign up at ButcherBox.com/CJR. It's important. It's ButcherBox.com/CJR. Back after this, it's Chiney and Golic Jr.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
We asked, and boy, oh boy, did y'all deliver. Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chiney Agwumike. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And we asked on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed, because we were talking about nicknames around here. Devin, our producer, was nicknamed the Gentle One as an offensive lineman playing youth football. That is a rough one, almost as rough as my nickname of Pudding when I was coming up. Tough one. So we asked what your worst nickname was. Of course, Chiney is too good at everything, and so even her nicknames, her bad nicknames, supposedly, are good in these situations. Everyone hears that and it's like, yeah, that's pretty good. Like,
it's not so bad.
Well, we got some winners in here. So we had Pete Engler tweets in, I was called Curly Fries in elementary school because of my hair. Oh. I had this one. This one took me out. Chiney, you can appreciate this. Chad Shields tweets in, I played basketball and my nickname was Ground Level because I couldn't jump. Not a great nickname for growing up there. Oh. As a freshman point guard, Kingpin 735 4 tweets in, I don't know why I read that number like that, My worst nickname growing up was Booty. My freshman point guard called me that game, and it stuck all 4 years that I was playing high school basketball. But this is my favorite one. John Norman, the Twitter guy, tweets in and says, "I feel your pain, Puddin. I was oatmeal cream pie." I have a lot of questions.
I can't even process that, Puddin.
I don't know what to do with all this one right now. And so I got to ask our next guest. We're delighted to be joined now by our ESPN NFL reporter, Kimberly Martin, with us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Shell Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas, gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on sequence 4 wear testing using SAE 5W30. Kimberly, I got to ask, did you ever have a bad nickname growing
up?
Uh-oh.
You know, okay. No. Well, in high school, it wasn't so bad. They called me Little Kim only because there was two Kimberlys in the school, and our school had about 92 kids in it, our high school. So that's another story. So she was Big Kim, so I got stuck with Little Kim.
You got some flow? You got a freestyle, Little Kim?
Okay, no, we don't need to do all that. No, I'm not going to pretend to be you on the mic. I'm just going to leave that there. But in elementary school, I'm probably dating myself, but people used to call me Kimmy Gibbler, and I would like want to fight them because of the Full House character. She was so annoying. So growing up, I hated when people called me Kimmy. Now I don't care, but Kimmy Gibbler was probably the worst sitcom character.
Kimmy Gibbler. That is, Kimberly, you've aged yourself right into my range. I feel comfortable with my peer out here in getting the Kimmy Gibbler reference. So you got a home right here on this show.
I appreciate that.
Incredible stuff. Kimberly Martin, now, as we will call her, our ESPN NFL reporter, is here with us on Chinay and Golic Jr. And Kimberly, bigger picture looking at the NFL right now, a lot of decisions being made by the league office, and I'm curious what you've heard about one, the proposal of a 16-team postseason for the NFL that would trigger if enough games are canceled. Have you heard anything in talking to people about how many canceled games it would take to get to this point?
Yeah, it's not clear how many it'll take, but just the fact that the league understands that we need a contingency plan. Just in case. We see everywhere, college football, we see, just in cities across the country, the COVID numbers are spiking. So the NFL, the idea that we're going to get the final 8 weeks or whatever the season, regular season, completed on time, I would love that to happen. Obviously, the league would love that to happen. But just in case, as we see these numbers spiking, hey, now, if we can't get through the key games, everybody getting those 16 games, then that'll trigger some, expanded playoffs. And that will be interesting if that does happen.
Absolutely. Kimberly Martin here with us, ESPN NFL reporter on Chinay and Golic Jr. Now, I want to head to my hometown because there is some news out of the Houston Texans when it comes to culture that sort of has me baffled a little bit. They have fired their vice president of communications, Amy Palsik, telling her she was no longer, quote, a cultural fit. She was the first woman to have had full public relations responsibilities for an NFL team in totality. And you see J.J. Watt go out there tweeting, showing tremendous love to Amy. Given the situation, it just seems like things aren't adding up. What is going on there, and what sense are you getting from what happened with the Houston Texans and their staff this morning?
More is going to come out. The crazy thing to me, because I'm just as baffled as you are, and a lot of people around the league are, and I mean players, reporters, because what we've seen with the Houston Texans for a while is a lot of decisions that are made that don't make sense. That on the surface don't make sense. And, from Bill O'Brien being GM to head coach and, trading away key guys and, to this, what happened with Amy today, I think, I love the outpouring of support from, people in the media, but really when you see the players, especially somebody like JJ Watt, come to her defense and say, whoever gets her, whichever organization, hopefully it's in the NFL, will be better off because Amy's just so great and she's always done what's in the best interest of the team. I think that speaks volumes. And so the big question I have is if somebody who is lauded in this way publicly by people across the NFL landscape, if that person does not fit your culture, then who does? And when you see Jack Easterby, you know, who came in, I think, in 2019. Since he's come in to assess the culture, you've seen them get rid of a GM. You've seen them, you know, in Brian Gain, you've seen them get rid of a GM slash head coach in Bill O'Brien. And now this, it's just, he has a lot of power there. So it'll be interesting to see how he shapes the organization going forward. But it is troubling to a lot of us.
Certainly troubling there, and like you said, we'll be waiting for more information to come out on this. Kimberly Martin, our ESPN NFL reporter, with us here on Chiney and Golic Jr. Kimberly, one of the other memos to come out of the league office was the owners finalizing a 10-month discussion that aimed at boosting the likelihood that teams will seek out, consider, and hire minority coaching and executive candidates. They approved a resolution that was going to reward teams with draft picks if one of their minority coaches or personnel people are hired to be a head coach or general manager. What's the sense you've gotten to talking people around the league about what the reception is like for this measure going into place?
Yeah, a lot of... You know, one personnel guy, a black personnel guy, texted me and was like, hey, maybe this will help me. Who knows? You know, but it's said in jest because a lot of people in the league, whether it's coaches or personnel guys, you know, no one wants to be hired or promoted or advanced because they're black, right? And I assume most owners are not trying to just hire somebody based off of skin color. So, but the frustrating thing is that you're dangling this carrot for a team, sort of like, hey, if you do this, you'll be rewarded in some sort of way for advancing the upward mobility of minorities, people of color, black men in particular. I think on the surface, the league has the right intentions. But the frustrating part for me is somebody who writes about this and talks about this a lot, and clearly the coaches and personnel guys who are affected by this inequity on a daily basis in their job, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to the owners. The league can incentivize all it wants, but are these draft picks, these compensatory picks, going to guarantee that Eric Bieniemy gets the shot that he deserves? Not necessarily. There are no guarantees here, and it just seems like the league is trying to fix something, but at the end of the day, it comes to the owners needing to do what's right, and that's expanding their scope, not just relying on word of mouth because their buddy says, oh, he would make a great coach. You know, it's really going out and trying to find the best candidates regardless of color, and maybe taking a chance on a guy that you don't know personally, but clearly he knows his stuff.
And that's become the difficulty, Kimberly, like you said, trying to get those circles to involve more people of color, to get more people in there so it's not just that same old group involved in all of this. Incredible info and insight as always, Kimberly. We appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks, Lil' Kim.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, my. I'm so glad we got a Kimmy Gibbler reference
on
the radio show today.
Oh, now, you know what's sad? I didn't know it before, but now after hearing that song, I remember Kimmy.
Oh, yeah. I guess say, once you do, you can understand why Kimberly Martin was
I'm so
maybe
sorry.
Less
I'm looking
enthused.
At Shannon, like, jumping up and down. I'm so sorry. It didn't make sense until I heard that song, and then it took me to Kimmy Gibbler. She was loyal. She was loyal.
Say what you want about you are right. She is definitely loyal in that one. At Chiney, at Mike Golic Jr., give us your worst nicknames on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. Coming up next, though, we'll stick with what Kimberly was telling us about here. If it's about getting NFL owners out of the same old hiring patterns, are these measures enough, and are they done in the right gesture? We'll get to that next. It's Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Our thanks to Lil' Kim.
Love it.
Kimberly Martin joining us in the last segment. Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on that Shell Pennzoil Performance Line like she did. Keep hitting us up. These nicknames are great. Ben Elliott tweets in right now. We are talking about worst nicknames in sports. What, Chiney, did I miss something?
I was going to say, the world should know we had Lil' Kim on our show.
The world should know that, yes, we had Lil' Kim on our show, slash Kimmy Gibbler, slash our ESPN NFL reporter.
We can lead with Lil' Kim.
We want to just stick with that one right now?
Yeah,
I feel like that's
yeah.
the one she hated the least, too, so we exactly. should probably do her that favor, because right now I have shared with you guys and been vulnerable about a nickname from my past. I don't tell people often that I had the nickname Puddin' for one of my good friends in middle school, and now all you guys are like, we're going to keep doing this.
Oh, Cheers. I... I found another one. Ken Corsack, at Chene, at Mike Goldjinger. Tell us your worst nicknames ever on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. My nickname was Jingles because I paid my entry fee to a bowling tournament with rolled up change. Jingles is a cool one, kind of.
I saw a dude pay for an entire Jack in the Box meal with a small backpack full of dimes. It was both frustrating and awe-inspiring at the same time because I appreciated the painstaking effort it took to get to that point. It just took a while for me to get my Jack in the Box.
I'm looking for a dime. He found them. A lot of them.
But speaking of singing, by the way, Austin Nelson tweets, and not necessarily a horrible nickname, but high school football coaches called me Backstreet because I was in show choir and the musical and had to leave practice early on occasion. I feel like that guy can be a part of our Glee ESPN club any day.
Absolutely. I love the confidence of like actually still doing it despite them making fun of you, calling you Backstreet.
You know, I would say, listen, if you're good at it, it hits a lot less when you get that nickname. Because if you got it like that, you can sing long after everyone stops playing sports.
You're right, Puddin.
Chene and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. So the NFL and their owners have approved measures right now to try and incentivize more in the way of hiring minority candidates when it comes to both coaching and executives. Their resolution that they approved would reward teams with, I believe it's a third-round compensatory pick, for draft picks if one of their minority coaches or personnel people is hired to be a head coach or general manager. So not rewarding a team that goes out and actually hires a candidate by giving them a pick, which is something that was floated earlier on last year or earlier this year, but saying if someone that you have within your organization is taken and given a job elsewhere, by having them in the organization, by having them in position and having them elevated, you would then be rewarded. Chene, when you hear this, does this sound like something that's closer to the right direction than just flat out rewarding a draft pick to a team for making a hire?
On the surface, I was concerned and it seemed gimmicky to the fact that the last thing we want is getting rewards for just hiring someone of color, someone diverse. To me, that didn't sit well. But now having it tied to after, meaning once you receive another position, meaning someone saw value in the work you did and now you're being hired, I can make a little bit more sense of it. But, you know, it's just tough because I feel like when we're trying to find these incentives, I think we've learned the last few months that education matters. We all are looking to our left and looking to our right, and we're trying to educate ourselves through the experiences of others. Instead of sort of leading with the incentives, why don't we put in more programs, maybe for front office people to understand, hey, like this is why we have to go out of our way to sort of hire people that don't look like us. Why is this important to create the opportunities for people to grow in the pipeline? Like, to me, the education is important so that we have the right intent instead of providing the incentive, which sometimes can feel gimmicky, even though I see that it's transitional, not just you get rewarded for hiring a specific person. It's like when someone else sees the value of you doing that, that's where you get rewarded. I feel a little bit better, but it still doesn't feel all the way right.
Yeah, Chene, I think it's all got to work in concert, right? It's got to be a holistic approach to this where it is those programs to get more candidates in. But I think this works to something that I've always said, and this is when it comes to people of different backgrounds and races understanding each other. This is why I laud the football locker room so much is it's hard to account for exposure. I think it's such a powerful thing to be around someone consistently with a different background than you and learn. You've got more similarities. And in these instances, because so much of hiring in the NFL and sports in general, everything is familiarity. We see it. We kind of call football. It ends up being an old boys club a lot of time in these situations. And so if you've got more people inside the organization, being exposed, being in all these different meetings, being in the same rooms without necessarily a direct, if you hire this person, then you acquire reward, maybe it's a step in the right direction. I always talk about the draft system that we have rewards people for being bad. This one, I at least feel like the arrow is pointed in the right direction.
I agree. Still trying to find the way, but haven't got there all the way yet. But hey, there is small progress here.
Small progress in a way that I think people can look at and start to feel better about. Because I know it was uncomfortable for a lot of people having that discussion. A lot of minority candidates who didn't want to feel like I'm just being brought in because the team is going to get some sort of compensatory draft pick. I have to recognize in a situation I haven't been in that might not feel great on the other side. So a lot to continue to unpack with there. Even more maybe to unpack right now with what's going on in college football. We'll figure out what's going on with Ohio State and their future next.